Hey, everybody, and welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about the Green Bay Packers 41-17 win, correct, Eric, over the Minnesota Vikings yesterday. Eric and I did our tape review today and talked to each other, and I've just finished writing the column, and now we're going to talk a little bit about what we wrote about and some things on top of that. And, you know, obviously everybody, Eric, knows that Jaire Alexander covered Jefferson a lot and the secondary played a really good game. But there was another factor in the pass defense that that was a big factor too, and that was the pass rush up the middle. What did you see there?
Well, I think a lot of things got to happen in order to be successful against a high-powered passing team like they have. And it all starts with the football. And in order to get that quarterback to make mistakes and make it difficult on him, they got to get him off the spot. They got to move him around. They got to collapse the pocket from the inside out. So what that means is the guard, center, guard, those three individuals, they have to be on the quarterback's lap. And when you watch that game, I mean, right from the get-go, they were getting pressure on Cousins. It didn't result in a lot of sacks, and they were doing it the right way. It wasn't a lot of free runners or free flyers running back there. What they were doing was collapsing the pocket and making it really difficult for Cousins to not just step back, hit to his five or three steps. It is, you know, you hear the saying, you know, at the top of his drop, right? So when you get to the, if it's a five step, it's one, two, three, four, five, and then boom, the ball comes out. Well, when you can't step up and there's nowhere to step up and it's all arm strength, that's where you have some of the errant passes. That's where some of the, you have to now look at, you got a lot of things going on. You got a bunch of bodies around you that don't like you very much. And you have to, my first guy is covered. So now I got to look to my second guy. I got to look to my third guy, all while bad guys are trying to hurt you. That's how to stop passing teams. You know, the old adage is you're going to be a good pass defense team by either getting a quarterback or by covering. Well, last night they were able to kind of do a little bit of both. And that is, I think one of the things, Pete, that coming into this season is what was really exciting about the Packers defense. And they lost some guys along the way and they failed to cover the pass. So they got in trouble as, in big chunks of the season. What I saw from there and what I hope that a lot of other people understand is that, you know, Joe Barry, I think, kind of discovered that he doesn't have to just sit back in zone, that he's got talented players and just let them play.
You know, it's interesting. I didn't think of this until after you and I had talked this morning, but when I was talking with the scout last week about, you know, other matters, I just asked him his opinion about the Vikings. And one of the first things he said was, you know, I don't think the outside rush bothers this guy that much because, you know, if he's got room to maneuver around the pocket or step up, he's fine. He goes, but I think pressure up the middle really bothers him. And that's when he makes a lot of his mistakes. And that's what happened. The Packers got, I was trying to think of the plays that we went through. The first third down, a third and four, Clark had pressure. And so he had to come out, like you said, he was going through his reads. He had to come off his reads early and through quickly. And I think it was Douglas broke it up. There was a third down, third and 10, where Jaron Reed, they ran a stunt. Jaron Reed was in his face, and he kind of floated a ball to Hockenson that didn't get the first down. And the next play is the tip pass and an interception return for a touchdown. Then there was a tip pass that Slayton had rushing up the middle that I think it was Amos who intercepted. So that was a huge factor. What do you think about what happened at center for the Vikings too? I mean, they came in without their starter, Garrett Bradbury, and then his backup got hurt on the second play of the goal line stand. And this, I can't even remember his first name, Chris Reed came in and replaced him. And I thought the Packers worked him pretty good.
It really helped. I mean, Mr. TJ Slayton, a second year guy, probably had the best game of his pro career at this point. And he's been kind of coming along as the season has gone on. But what you saw was a third string center versus a guy that's probably might be a starter next season, depending on, you know, and if you look around the league, you know, he's kind of in that club, you know, low end starter type guy, very good rotational player that you can live with. But he made plays. You know, he tipped two passes. He had a really good play on the goal line stand. It was the second, the one where the starter got hurt. He rolled it. That's where he got that.
It was on that third and one. Yeah.
Yeah. He rolled in there and got that. What a nice play he made on that running back there. And he had good support inside. So it worked out really good for him. And they were able to get that guy on skates. The other thing that I thought was really interesting, and I kind of was expecting it, was that they were going to try an alignment one-on-one pass blocking. So what that means by lining up their D tackles in positions that you probably wouldn't see normally when you see a running quarterback. So against Miami, against the Eagles, you saw their D tackles, at least one of them would be in a 2-eye. So lining up an inside shade of the guard to try to alleviate that quarterback just taking off up the middle and going. So what you saw the Packers do is they had their D tackles line up wide. They were in threes and sometimes really wide threes. And then they brought their outside linebackers down into fives. In some instances, especially against Miami's, they had those guys out in threes or 2-eye, and then the outside guy would be out in a 7, so off the tackle even, trying to get outside pressure. But what the Packers were doing here was they were doing a couple of things. They widened them out because they were not worried about Cousins running. And he got a couple runs, and good for you. If that's what you're going to win the ball game on, then good for you. You know, there's not a lot of inertia in their quarterback running game, right? So, you know, the momentum on that football team is it through the air. And so that freed up and gave primarily one-on-one blocking onto the with the guard and versus the tackles. And then the center is there for cleanup. And by that time, sometimes it's too late. So, and you saw that happen last evening. And it also helps with a twist. So they'll line up their guard, or the guy on the guard, and it'll be condensed down to a 5 outside shoulder of the tackle. The tackle takes up field. It starts wide, getting width, and then there's a nice big alley, a gap for the end to go around. They did that a few times early, and then as the game progressed and got out of hand, they did that less and less. But you saw what they were doing, and they were trying to get one-on-one matchups with their D tackles to try to primarily get pressure in A and B gaps.
Yeah, and after you explained that, when I rewatched it, Clark had a lot of one-on-ones, and it kind of looked like the center. You know, I wasn't sure exactly why the lining them up a little wider, why the center still wouldn't help, but the center just kind of looked like he was looking for work on a lot of plays instead of just immediately going to a double team.
Right, and that's just you're just alignment. You know, you're just getting them over into that gap because what you see happen is if they line up on a 2 or 2-eye. That center has got a great angle to get there. Now when he's got – so you wouldn't think that 6 inches makes a big difference or a foot makes a big difference, but it really does, especially when he's got a flat. No, because he goes too flat and the guard thinks that he's going to be there. Now it's, you know, one of those free runner type plays. Or he guesses wrong and the other guy who's in the 3 on the other side – gets a free runner. So you really got to, as the center is, if you know, the pass blocking rules for most teams are you get a piece of me, I got a piece of you. There's nobody there. He's there. And he's got to have his head on a swivel and looking hard for one way. Cause what would happen if they didn't do that and say he just automatically went to Clark, then that's when you fire a backer through the A gap and get that free runner. So the Packers didn't have to do a lot of blitzing. They blitzed a little bit with Walker, but it was very few and far between. They got it done with basically their 4 down linemen, and then they sat back and they played more dime last night than they played in weeks past. So they were really concerned about making sure that they gave the rush a little bit of an extra count or two in order to make sure that they got him uncomfortable and make some errant throws.
So this will be a little asking you to just go off the top of your head here because it's something we didn't talk about today. But So they got the Lions this week. Goff isn't really much, you know, I don't know that he's all that much more mobile than Cousins is. They have Swift as a good running back. They don't have the receiving talent the Vikings have. Can they, do you think we'll see any kind of similar game plan, at least from the front, or do you think they'll have to pay more attention to the run against these guys than they did with Cook? And on passing downs, will they widen out again, or do you think they'll have to change that up this week?
Well, it's going to depend on the down and distance. You know, third and seven plus, third and five plus, they probably will widen out some in order to get some one-on-one matchups there. I think the true reality is that, you know, they faced a dome team this past weekend, and they're going to face another dome team, and that's really difficult. And now they're going to be playing at night. So long-range forecast, I guess you'd have to go and look and see where that's at. But so at night, you're going to have – it's probably going to be a little slicker. You're going to have – excuse me, the ball is going to be a little slicker. So I think that's going to change how Detroit's going to handle things and probably going to want to run the ball some. And I'm not convinced that their passing attack is that much different than the Vikings, because they have that young kid that just came back, the first-round draft pick who was injured last year. And I think he's a pretty good player, and I don't think you can thumb your nose at him yet. And then they got St. Brown, who's pretty good. They have two tight ends that aren't Hockenson caliber, but they're pretty good. So I think that it poses some issues, because what happens is when you have two tight ends that are going out into the pass routes, now you got to really think about them a little bit. And they're going to have some matchup problems there. You're going to have a big body on a D-back at some point. So that can cause some issues. I do believe, though, that the Lions are going to run the ball a little bit more. So that's going to put some more pressure on Quay Walker to be able to get out into that. If they're going to put him in zone, that he's got to be able to carry that zone deeper a little bit, so there's not that deep cross coming up behind him. And I also believe that they're going to have to be aggressive on the line of scrimmage too, like they were Sunday night against the Vikings. And when I say that, is on the perimeter, the cornerbacks are going to have to be physical.
So let's widen the lens here a little bit and talk about I don't know if prediction is quite the right word, but our take on things. When they were 3-6, I think it was 3-6. I remember Eric Brancheck saying, we were talking about how they're going to do the rest of the year. Who are they going to beat?
Yes.
Who are they going to beat?
I said that.
And I remember Pete Doherty saying in writing when they were 4-8 that they're done, you know, and Gary was out, that they're done. They're not, there's no way they're making the playoffs. And here they are. They win and they're in. Where did we go wrong? What did we miss?
I think they, you know, they came together as a team, you know, and started playing football. And this is going to sound really strange, but they got a little bit of a kickstart in that kick return game. I mean, I think
there's nothing strange about that at all. I'll expound on that when you're done. But no, I don't think there's anything strange about that at all.
It's just, it seems weird that your team turns around by how you can return kicks and punts. How does that, you know, because I think a lot of people don't put much status or put much weight onto what type of momentum that creates for your offensive football team and your defensive team when you're running out there and you're returning some big kicks, and you saw it. We all saw it on the sidelines. You don't get to see it on TV because they don't show it much. But on the sidelines, when they have a big return, I mean, that whole bench is jumping up and down, and they darn near maul the guy when he comes off the field. You know, that's a big deal. And you walk out on that field with a little bit of belief and a little bit of piss and vinegar. And it's like, all right, let's keep this going. And it happened. And I think, you know, you can also point to the emergence. None of us saw the impact that Christian Watson was going to have on defenses. You know, that Cowboys game was a prime example. Nobody. I mean, I don't think there was a guy in the country that had Christian Watson on their roster starting in that game. And all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying? So,
fantasy football, you mean? Yeah. There wasn't anybody. Yeah.
No, there wasn't. Why would they? Now the guys, you know, but that changed it. And I know there was a couple guys early in the season that said they got to find a way to get this guy the ball too, because he changes he changes the way defenses have to play. It really makes you think twice about dropping that safety down in the box when he's on the field. And it also, like last night, P was, you know, we talked about it too. Do you, if he's not 100%, do you put him on the field and save him for the Lions? No. At 75%, if that's because he wasn't 100%, I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
He did not look like he was 100%. And that's fine because the defense still had to understand where he was. When he lines up, the defense had to know where he was. And that changes the focus and gives them opportunities in the run game and also opens things up for other players. And I guess the prime example of it, if there was one play that it stuck out where he made a difference was they were going in the beginning of the fourth quarter when Rodgers rolled out to his right. They had a jet sweep motion and he went along and the safety went with him and the linebackers kind of, you saw them turn their heads. You said, okay, here we got to watch for jet sweep here. And then they ran the boot around it and there was nobody there in front of Tonyan. That's a big deal. And that's a huge deal because it changed that play and it just showed how impactful he was onto where, you know, the antennas are for the defense. So they see that guy doing jet sweep motion. They got to hunker down and play tough. So I think nobody saw the Christian Watson effect and nobody, I think, really understood, including myself, how much of a difference that kick return guy made. That's huge. Nixon, you know, you can put it on those two guys on making the difference on this football team.
Yeah. Well, you basically just covered everything I was going to say. I mean, I think that's 80 or 90% of it is those two guys and the defense has played better, especially the last couple games. I'll be curious what you think about this. I still think not having Rashawn Gary is going to bite them at some point, but you know, they got a decent rush the last two games, you know, good enough for sure. And they're getting help from special teams and their offense is coming around and they do have good cover guys. There's no great team in the NFC. I mean, they went to the wire with Philadelphia at Philly a few weeks ago. They took that down to the end. And San Francisco, most talented team in the league, or at least in the conference, top to bottom. But they got a seventh-round rookie playing quarterback. So, you know, I'm not going to make any bold predictions about, you know, that there's no way these guys could make a run. I mean, I don't know if you think the chance. I still think the Gary thing makes it a lot tougher, and a lot of things got to break their way. But I don't know. What do you think their chances are of if they win this week of, you know, being a threat?
Well, I go back to 2010, or was it? Yeah, 2010. I think they had like five or six outside linebackers that were on IR, at least four, you know, that didn't finish the season. And they had some guy they brought in off the heap, 93, Eric something.
Eric Walton, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. And pretty much just a guy, right? But they needed somebody to play, and he played okay. And I, you know, so they got that with Hollins. But you're right, you know, there's that year when they were making that run, you know, 12 got really hot. And I think you're right that at some point not having Gary is going to be one of those games. And I really thought it was going to be last night. And
I thought it was going to be last night or the week before.
It didn't show up. Both. It didn't show up. So they found a way to get through it. Are they a much better football team when Rashawn Gary's on the field? Without question. Running away from him is just as tough as running at him. And then not only that, but the app, you know, the pass rush is way different when he's in the football game. So it will be interesting to see because these teams aren't going to get worse as you go along, and you're going to be playing, you know, if they were to get into the playoffs, they're either going to get the Vikings or the Niners, right?
Yep. That's
pretty much how it looks.
Yeah.
So the Niner game, I think would be really tough because I think they have a pretty solid O-line and they run block very well. And I think that would be the tougher of the two matchups obviously going in, but yeah, missing Gary is not having him and not having a guy that you can lean on. Because even Preston Smith, he's okay. He's an okay pass rusher. He's not special. He's not great. You know, and then they're playing with a mixture of other guys with Hollins and Ingambare, and, you know, those guys are maybe not okay, but they're just fill a spot. So I don't know where it ends, but I do agree with you that at some point that's going to bite them.
So last thing I wanted to run by again, something else you and I didn't talk about on the phone, but so what's at stake this week besides, of course, getting in the playoffs? Do you think things change in the off season, just depending on whether they win and lose this game, as far as what they do at who they keep, who they don't, who they cut, and, you know, any of those moves? You think that matters at all by the outcome, or by the how well or poorly that this team performs on Sunday?
Well, I think the layman would think that if they don't look good and Rodgers goes out there and puts up a rough game, throws a pick or two, gets sacked a couple times, gets caught holding the ball, I think there's some thought there that that would be the it for him, and they're going to put him on the block and get rid of him. When you think of, like, go back to Brian Gutekunst's press conference, and they said that it wasn't a single year. They weren't bringing him – they weren't restructuring his deal and putting that extension on there to get one more year out of him. I think they're thinking it's a two-year deal. And I think they got a – I think the Packers almost owe him that at this point. So I think at the quarterback position, I don't think much changes there. I'm not so sure what they're going to do at left tackle. So I don't know. I'm not quite sure. I don't really have an opinion if it's going to change things. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure either. My guess is it won't change much, if anything. You never know what they're thinking for sure. So, you know, when we're just reading tea leaves and making best guesses here, when we're talking about these things, and like Bakhtiari, I really don't know what they're going to do there. I mean, when he plays well, but it probably comes down to what the doctors say about his knee and what are the odds. And they're just, you know, they don't know, but what do they think the odds are that he's going to have problems next season that could make him miss a lot of games or even lead to another surgery? I mean, he's had what, 3 surgeries already on that in the past couple of years. So I'm not sure it will make any difference one way or the other. I was during when they were losing games and sitting at 4-8, I was thinking there was a real chance that they would look to trade him in the off season. It's just watching now, it's kind of hard to see that happen unless they feel really, really good about Jordan Love and want to get him out there, you know? So I don't know that it's going to change anything one way or the other with how they play this week. I wonder if they've seen enough to feel good about their possibilities next year with Watson, Dobbs, the 2 running backs, assume they bring Jones back. And then if you have Rodgers at quarterback, be a lot different start to the season than it was this year, as far as, you know, how good they are offensively.
Yeah. I think they're either missing a tight end or they got to utilize the tight end that they have a little bit better offensively for them to be, you know, really take the next step. And I don't know, you know, I'm kind of on this, you know, you go back to Ron Wolf saying it's better to get rid of a guy a year too early than a year too late. And you look at what the Packers have done recently with older veterans, and they've kind of done that, you know, the exception being with, you know, maybe you're looking at Za'Darius Smith and seemed to put together a good season. But if he falls off the face of the earth, you're okay with letting him go and having a decent season this year with the Vikings, and next year sitting on IR half the season.
Yep.
And I think that might just be the case that you do with Bakhtiari, because I don't know, you know, that knee is a tricky thing. And can he come back and have a decent year next year with the Packers? Probably, or with somebody else, maybe, probably. But it's, you know, he's on the wrong side of 30, and that thing's not getting any better. And games aren't getting any shorter, and they're not taking away games out of the season. So it's tough for a guy with that kind of injury to keep going. And I'm not so sure that he they don't keep him around or try to restructure some of that deal. I'm not sure. You're the expert on that, Pete, on contracts and all that. I am far beyond that.
Yeah. So on that subject, cause they can do it they would save about the same amount of money if they restructure cut, but they'd obviously have to spend more, a lot more cash if they keep them, and that would count against future caps. But along that line then, because, you know, I think that is a real possibility they cut him. What would you feel like, what would you think of the quality of their line if Nyman and Zach Tom are their tackles next year?
Well, if you cut them, you're drafting old tackle very high, one or two. And you're going to put those, you're going to expect that guy to be probably your left tackle. I really like, I like Tom as a tackle. I'm not so sure he's ready to be a every week starter, but I think, I mean, he held up against some of the best pass rushers in the league this year, and he held up last night against Hunter. And that was that, when I saw him come out, when I saw him enter the game, I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And he held up, and, you know, surprisingly enough, it happened. Okay. I do like Nyman. I think if Tom is gonna be your left tackle, if you're saying that's going to be our left tackle or our right tackle, then he's going to have to add some just overall mass to his body in order to make that happen. But he's got, you know, he's not your cookie cutter left tackle, you know, and he doesn't have long arms.
He does not look like a left tackle on the hoof compared to most guys.
No, I mean, you know, and you got to remember the Packers also got that Caleb Jones. He's sitting on the, I don't know if he's active once in a while, but I mean, he's out, he's on the team. So there's options that they have there that we probably aren't even thinking about. I just think it'd be hard to roll out there with Tom.
Okay, so we've gone, the sand in the hourglass is dropping. Now, we had a request on Twitter last week to go a little longer, so we did. But let's I think we need to cut it off here. Want to thank
already?
Everybody. Yeah, already.
I blocked off 45 minutes.
It does. It goes by fast, doesn't it? I feel like we just started.
Right.
But I do want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to us, and I hope you're doing well. For Eric, I'm Pete, and this has been the After Further Review.